who here's heard of William Lane Craig? Cool, that's a pretty decent number.
Welcome to Reasonable Faith with Dr. William Lane Craig. I'm Kevin Harris. Happy New Year. As we come to the end of 2014, I have a little treat for you. Today, you're going to hear from two very interesting, intelligent, creative, and charming people. No, not me and Dr. Craig, but a former atheist from the UK, Peter Byrum, and a producer from the States, Mike Moondog Burnett, who has written a very funny parody in keeping with the season called "'Twas the Night of the Debate." And if you're not already, I hope you'll become really passionate about the work of Dr. Craig and Reasonable Faith. And after you hear from Peter Byrum in a moment, I don't see how you can help but be absolutely committed to an articulate, intelligent, reasonable presentation of the claims of Jesus all over the world. And I'll say to our non-believing friends, atheists, agnostics, those who hold views contrary to the Christian faith, I hope you appreciate the depths of the topics we discuss on this podcast, and that every effort is made to present opposing views fairly and accurately. Please keep coming back to these podcasts. We have some amazing conversations with Dr. Craig coming up. And if you're a follower of Christ, consider supporting Reasonable Faith financially. We depend on your gifts to keep us strong and providing resources addressing today's hottest questions all over the world. Just click the donate button on our website, reasonablefaith.org. Reasonablefaith.org. And now, here are two audio clips from our friend Peter Byrum. One thing that he's known for all over the internet is his confrontation with Richard Dawkins on why Dawkins won't debate Dr. Craig. You'll hear the audio of that confrontation in a moment. But first, listen to his story.
I came from a religious background. My parents are Christian. But that Christian upbringing, whatever faith you might say that I had at that time, that didn't survive leaving my parents' authority and going away to university. It was sincere doubts, but also slightly less sincere desires, and the two played off each other. And the New Atheism, the Richard Dawkins books, were perfect for that, because they played up to both, showing that atheism looked more attractive, but also that it was more intellectually credible. So they were very persuasive. What stuck with me the most from Richard Dawkins was that he defined faith as being believing something without evidence, or in the face of evidence. And he would always be saying, you need to base your beliefs on things that have good evidence, good reason for them. And so, of course, I completely agreed with that. Looking through YouTube, that was when I stumbled across William Lane Craig and his debates and his talks. That was very different. Something struck me about that as being very unusual, because here was a Christian academic who was actually talking very precisely, very logical, and making his case from the ground up, appealing to the very reason and evidence that Dawkins was telling me I had to take seriously and look for. I ended up needing to take a look at myself and actually realize, you know, there actually is good evidence for Christianity. So why haven't you become one yet? I was trying to hold out in living a certain way. I was running away from it, and that was silly, frankly. It was very silly to keep running away. It's not about following a load of, you know, religious rules or anything like that. It's actually about just coming back to the relationship with God that we were supposed to have, in the way that a child who's run away from home can be reconciled to their parents, for example. So really, that was the realization. Just come home to it. Stop running away. It's silly, and you've no good reason to run away, and you've every good reason to come back. Reasonable faith is incredibly helpful and extremely important, because when students do go to university, they will be confronted in just the way that I was with all sorts of objections and hostilities to Christianity and a secular culture which really can actually look very attractive if you're not firmly rooted in your faith and actually know why it's worth believing in the first place and being clear about what it is and why there are good reasons for it. I would strongly encourage people to support Reasonable Faith. It's at the forefront of defending Christianity here in the 21st century. And it's doing incredibly good work. For me, it completely revolutionized my thinking. It made all sorts of light bulbs go on in my head. It revived my thinking and it revived my faith. And it's no coincidence that those two things go together.
Well, it's fantastic to be here. I've been looking forward to this for a very long time, and I hope that whatever I've got to say today can be helpful to you. Now, I think Michael Green put it very well earlier when he was talking about what typically happens at university when people go there and become students and so many fall out of the faith. That's exactly what happened to me. I had some Christian faith in teenage years. I had a bit of that. But then, when it got to the point of university, that really did fall away. I just chucked it completely in the bin. And looking back, I think that was for two reasons, basically. First of all, I had genuine doubts. I actually did think, what if this is actually all a load of complete nonsense? What if it is just made-up stuff that's just believed by a load of ignorant, closed-minded people in the deep south of the USA? Stereotypes, that kind of thing. What if it is nonsense? I should feel so embarrassed that I even toyed with this stuff before. So there really were genuine doubts. There were questions that just didn't make sense to me, and there didn't seem to be answers out there. And of course, at university, you are flung the different challenges and the different opinions. They come at you with very strong force. But also, if I've got to be honest, I actually quite liked the idea of Christianity being false at the same time. It was actually looking pretty attractive. I mean, it's that point in your life where you've left your parents, you've shaken off their authority, and it's your opportunity to make your own sort of independent stamp on the world. So if you've shaken off your parents' authority, the last thing you want is a cosmic authority. I mean, get out of here. I don't want that. Get out of here. You know, that was just a very unattractive idea. So it was a combination of both those things, I think. Genuine doubts, but also, yeah, slightly insincere desires at the same time. And both of them really played off each other. Now, I just got to the point, kind of about halfway through university, of really thinking I could just ignore the whole question. And then one of the most inconvenient things happened. My housemate that I was living with, he wasn't even brought up Christian at all, he became Christian, really, a really passionate Christian, and that was seriously inconvenient. I was almost seething at him, going, I'd just about forgotten this, come on, you know. But now, actually, I mean, I've got to be really grateful to him. It's probably one of the best inconvenient things that ever happened to me, really. That's got to be the way I describe it. But it gets worse, because not only did he become Christian, one of my best friends, who was a bit like me, he was Christian for a while, but then I remember the day when he walked up to me and said, Pete, you've got to read this book by Richard Dawkins. It's called The God Delusion. It's amazing. So these were two of my very best friends that I was living with at the time, with totally opposite points of view. And that just meant I could not ignore it. I was just forced. I was forced to look at it. Now, that meant that I hadn't properly looked at atheism yet. I hadn't really looked into it. And so when I was reading the Dawkins books, the Hitchens books, the new atheist material, and seeing what interviews with them, all the material that they had, there was a paradigm shift there. I was thinking, what if they're right? Yeah, they might be right here. You know, where is the evidence, etc., etc.? You know, what about this? What about this? And I was rooting for them for a very long time, actually. And it kind of fed the sort of hostility that I was kind of feeling towards Christianity at that time. I can remember some of my friend would bring his friends over from church, and I was just kind of thinking, I mustn't go near them, because if I end up liking them, I'm going to have to totally ignore them. And that was the interesting thing. Trying to be atheist, or rather trying to hold on to it, I thought it would just be like just sort of throwing off some shackles and relaxing in liberation. It actually took up a heck of a lot of energy. It really did. There was this sense of waking up and needing to say to myself, by the way, remember there's no God, right? Yeah, of course, yeah. By the way, and that just didn't make sense, really. So I just felt I had to investigate it. I had to keep looking into Christianity, if only to really make sure that I could, you know, be comfortable about being false. But the interesting thing is that through looking through the Dawkins and the Hitchens work and rooting for them, that was when I started discovering Christian apologetics. I'd seen some Christians who were terrible at defending their faith, and I was going, yeah, wipe the floor with them, Richard, you know, that kind of thing. But then slowly I was weeding them out, and that's when I started to see, for example, his debate with John Lennox, and just gradually discovering lots of other much more robust, academically credible apologists. I should check, actually, who here's heard of William Lane Craig? Cool, that's a pretty decent number. Yeah, I mean, he's another really big name in Christian apologetics who came over here in October. He's a philosopher and theologian, and he's very well known, not just for his published work, but there's tons of video of him debating atheists. A lot of that is on YouTube and very easy to find. And I was watching that thinking, this is a bit unusual. The atheists seem to be having a pretty hard time here. He's coming up with some arguments that are really sort of shaking them up a bit. And I was getting into his work and looking at that and investigating it, because I took the Dawkins line, you know, where he said, you know, look at the evidence, try and find out, you know, where is the truth leading? And so I thought, yeah, that's a good idea. But then I was noticing that actually the question was being raised on the internet, you know, what if Richard Dawkins debated him? You know, that would be interesting. You know, what ideas would they have? And I thought, yeah, that'd be good. You know, they could examine each other's ideas. But it turned out that he was continually running away from that debate with strings and strings of excuses for not engaging with this person who clearly had a lot of interesting stuff to say. And that was very strange. And that was one of the things that was almost turning me around. I was wondering, where's this running away coming from? I don't quite understand it. And this might be a good point to show the video, actually, whoever's going to be in charge of that. There was, in the middle of quite an agnostic phase, I went along to one of the debates that Dawkins was there, and I thought, look, loads of people are asking questions about this on the internet. I want to find out what's going on here. And so I thought I'd jump in and ask him, basically, and this clip is basically gone around the internet a fair bit. Professor Dawkins, you are arguably the world's leading apologist for atheism, and you have been invited on several occasions by arguably the world's leading Christian academic apologist, Dr. William Lane Craig, to engage in debate. I would like to know why this is not an example of the new atheist doing what Lord Harries has described as avoiding the strongest possible arguments from the opposition.
Okay, thank you. That's a very straight question. Over here now.
I have always said when invited to do debates that I will be happy to debate a bishop, a cardinal, a pope, an archbishop. Indeed, I have done both. But that I don't take on creationists, and I don't take on people whose only claim to fame is that they are professional debaters. They've got to have something more than that. I'm busy.
There are about four excuses there. He's got about nine more that he's used. Now, that's just really, I think that kind of summed up what happened in a way, where I was just realizing this stuff the new atheism are bringing out, it just isn't holding water. Loads of it is based on emotion and rhetoric. And I just had to face that. And I think to kind of draw it to a close, really, I spent several years investigating the Christian apologetics and seeing how the atheist arguments, they just weren't working. I couldn't use any good arguments against Christianity myself. And it made me realize that, you know, I've run out of arguments and objections. There's really good, solid stuff here. And so I just had to face up to the fact that all I was left with was the not wanting it to be true. And I was still pretty stubborn. I kind of carried on for a bit, you know, just still sort of not really acting on it very much, and still just making life decisions that were based on, you know, maybe being a bit more hedonistic, or, you know, or just trying to ignore it. But it really did get to the crunch point of just realizing, look, there are good arguments here. I'm running away from it. It doesn't really seem to be working. This is just stupid, you know, just come back to it. And so it really accumulated with, as my personal life and that kind of running away was, you know, was going downhill, the interest in the apologetics was coming right up. And the real decisive moment, actually, was when William Lane Craig came along to do a speaking and debating tour last October. I got heavily involved in that, and it was fantastic just meeting him and his wife and the other people involved and just seeing more of the arguments and drawing it together. There actually was a moment, I think, that really changed it. I was speaking with his wife, Jan, who's a lovely lady, and she actually said to me, I explained that I was sympathetic to Christianity, but I'm not quite there. And she actually said, well, Pete, if you don't think you could give absolutely everything to Jesus, don't become a Christian. Don't do it. And that really shook me, because I thought that all Christians would just want to beg people to come and join us. You know, no, please, come on. And she said, no, if you can't commit to it, don't do it. And that really just had to give me pause for thought, really. And that was when I just realized this running away is silly and the arguments don't work. So that, in summary, is what I think the great impact of apologetics had for me. The sincere questions that I had, the answers were there, really good, deep answers that I could really look into and see how credible the Christian worldview is. But also the insincere stuff that was going on with me, I just had to realize the insincerity of it. And I couldn't hide behind the intellectual objections. And I think that's the great thing that apologetics can do. Not only can you address the sincere questions, I think it'll also expose some of the people that maybe have more emotional, personal reasons who hide behind the intellectual questions, because I was doing that. And it's great to come back and stay properly as a Christian this time. So, yeah, thank you, apologists everywhere, and thank you for listening.
And from our friend Mike Moondog Burnett, 'twas the night of the debate.
'Twas the night of the debate, and all through the hall, all the thinkers were thinking and spoke as were called. Only a premise would stand between a more logical view, as conclusions were made and accusations were spewed. William Lane Craig began with reasons to believe there's a God. The atheist appealed to a spaghetti monster. How odd. Bill spoke of the origin of the universe, fine-tuning in life. His Kalam cosmological argument cut like a knife. Objective morality and the resurrection was shared as he silenced his challengers with reason and care. The thinkers were all nestled all smug in their thoughts, the audience anticipating how each challenge would be fought. With visions of nothing and infinity in their heads, the opposers did stammer and weave a big web. And Bill in his sweater and colorful tie laid out the facts no one could reasonably deny. When out in the audience there rose such a clatter, as he said, out of nothing, nothing comes. It didn't seem to matter. We just happened, they shouted, and that's all there is. Stop believing in fairy tales and this made-up God biz. Moondog was hosting and dished out advice. Please stick to the facts and everyone play nice. When what to my wondering eye should appear but a bearded man with a book warranted Christian beliefs kept near. A little old offender so lively and bright, I knew in a moment St. Plantinga was in the fight. More rapid than eagles his protégés came, and he whistled and shouted and called them by name. Now Moreland, now Habermas, now Strobel and Sharp, on Lacona, on Turek, on Kokul and Copan, to the top of the stage, to the top of the hall. Now defend away, defend away, defend away all. Invalid arguments flew as a wild hurricane flies. Truth often traded for a pack full of lies. When they met with an obstacle about a big daddy in the sky, up to the microphone the discoursers did fly. With color-coded PowerPoint slides of arguments galore, cases were made for God's existence that no one could ignore. His eyes, how they twinkled, his dimples, how merry. His cheeks were like roses, his nose like a cherry. His droll little mouth was drawn up like a bow, and the beard on his chin was as white as the snow. The stump of a pipe he held tight in his teeth, and the smoke it encircled his head like a wreath. No changes needed here for Santa or St. Plantinga. The atheists all groaned with each point that was made, but offered no evidence in their ad hominem parade. Plantinga grinned as he laughed and said, "Really? That's the sort of thing one might think if they were, say, just plain silly." He spoke lots of numbers and letters to explain that without the notion of a god, we couldn't know anything. He filled all their minds with thoughts never heard, but always provided some thoughts from the word. Jesus is the way, the truth, and the light. Oh, and I have 22 arguments for theistic belief, but I heard him exclaim as he drove out of sight, "Merry Christmas to all!" is a properly basic belief.
Good job, Moondog. Now, if you're not familiar with some of the names in that piece, like Alvin Plantinga, Gary Habermas, Mike Lacona, Paul Copan, and others, let this be a tool for you to become familiar with their work. You'll become familiar with top scholars when you spend some time at reasonablefaith.org. And again, consider becoming a financial partner with us. It will truly be a blessing to hear from you and keep us strong all over the world. Just click the donate button at reasonablefaith.org. We appreciate it. I'm Kevin Harris, and we'll see you next time on Reasonable Faith with Dr. William Lane Craig.